It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Members of the United Auto Workers are voting on new contracts with Detroit's big three auto manufacturers. The agreements would cap off a weeks-long campaign of targeted strikes. Now, the UAW and the three unionized car companies have tentative agreements on things like wage increases, a boost in retirement benefits, and where and how some products are made. UAW President Sean Fain addressed union members yesterday during a Facebook Live video presentation highlighting the gains and the aggressive walkout strategy.
This strategy was only possible because of you, the membership. You had faith and you were unified. Not every union can go to the bargaining table and say, our members are ready to walk out with zero notice, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's how powerful our solidarity is in the UAW. We started from a 9% wage offer and ended at 25%. We didn't take the first offer. We didn't take the second offer. Across the three companies, we had over 30 contracts offered.
We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Were you, your family, or friends affected in some way by the UAW strikes and now by this tentative agreement? What kind of impact does this have on you? If you've been following this story, maybe as an auto consumer, do you have thoughts or questions about how this all shook out? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Micheline Maynard is a journalist and broadcaster based in Michigan. She's the author of the 2003 book, The End of Detroit, How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Market. 20 years later, she recently launched a Substack newsletter as a kind of digital sequel to the book. It's called Intersection, Everything That Moves. Mickey, welcome back to Central Time.
I'm so happy to be back with you. Thanks.
Let's start with what's going on right now. What are we seeing as various locals vote to ratify or not these agreements?
Well, a number of locals have ratified them. And let's remember that Ford, Chrysler, although they're called Stellantis now, and General Motors are all voting sort of consecutively because the deals were reached first at Ford, second at Stellantis, and then at General Motors. So you're seeing big locals across the country vote on the contract, and the results will probably be in a week or so.
Can you compare the expectations that UAW President Sean Fain had set at the outset when these walkouts started with what we're seeing in the actual tentative agreements?
So a little background on Sean Fain. He was elected in March as UAW president, the first time a UAW president has been directly elected. The president used to be elected by leadership of the union, and this is a real groundbreaking person for the union. No one has ever been directly elected before, and immediately during his campaign and then as president, he started talking about getting back what the union has lost in concessions over the last 15 or 20 years. He was talking about a 40% wage increase over 5 years. He was talking about restoration of cost of living allowances, which are called COLA. He was talking about gains for retirees who had really not gotten much of anything out of UAW contracts over the last decades, I would say. And he was also talking about something called tiers. In 2007, the UAW agreed to concessions with the car companies that allowed new workers to be hired in at sharply lower wages and less generous benefits. In 2007, let's remember, car companies were closing plants. And indeed, I think Janesville closed in 2009. So hiring was not really an issue back in the zero zeros. It was keeping your plant open. Well, fast forward, and a number of plants have hired people, and you now have kind of a division in the union of about 60% of workers who were hired before 2007 and 40% who've hired since 2007. So you might be working, you might have two people working alongside each other, one making $32 an hour and one making $16 or $17 an hour.
One other wider ongoing issue here is the car market is changing slowly, but maybe picking up steam to more electric vehicle production. That's been a concern. How those are made, how and who makes the batteries, and whether those are made by UAW employees. How did that factor into all this?
So Sean Fain talked a lot during these negotiations about a just transition, because everybody in the auto industry knows that electric vehicles are about to become more important. And this isn't just an American issue. This is a global issue. Electric vehicles are huge in China, and European countries are mandating the end to internal combustion engines over the next 15 or so years. So the American companies are really pushing to develop electric vehicles, and in particular electric vehicle batteries. And each of the car companies has a joint venture with a South Korean company or a Japanese company to build electric vehicle batteries. Now they're planning to build significantly big plants in the United States to produce those batteries. But what the UAW wanted was a guarantee that those employees would be represented by the union.
Talking to Micheline Maynard, journalist and broadcaster based in Michigan, looking at the UAW auto strike, the tentative deals reached now with the big three automakers. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe personal experiences if you were involved in this, 800-642-1234. So Micheline, what was the resolution that came out of these agreements when it came to electric vehicles? I think one of your recent pieces on Substack said they got some of it. There's still some open questions.
Yeah. So here's a little bit of a complexity. If it's a car, if it's a plant that's owned by one of the big three automakers, they can require that those workers be UAW members. But in these joint venture plants, you can't require that another employer, especially an employer outside the United States, hire UAW members. So the compromise was that the plants that will be owned by the big three, the Detroit companies, will have UAW representation, and the plants that are in the joint ventures are going to have to be negotiated at some point in the future. What's very interesting is that Stellantis is going to reopen a factory in Belvidere, Illinois, not too far from Wisconsin. And people who lost their jobs there when the plant shut down this last spring will have the right of return. They can come back to the plant from wherever they've gone. And there'll be a similar situation in Lordstown, Ohio, near Youngstown, where there is an electric battery venture that's being built, and the people who are laid off from Lordstown will have the right of return if they want to go to this electric vehicle venture, and they will be able to be UAW members and get their full pay and benefits.
A certain amount of time ago, some decades ago, if we were talking about the big three in the UAW, well, we'd be talking about most of the U.S. automotive industry. Well, now we've got lots and lots of non-unionized plants in less union-friendly states around the country. It seems like in these negotiations, people on both sides were kind of looking over their shoulders at these competitive plants around the country. How big a factor is that when we see these union negotiations?
It was a big factor in these negotiations because roughly half of the U.S. market is now owned by these international brands, the transplants like Toyota and Honda and Hyundai and BMW and Mercedes-Benz. And so the UAW has never been able to organize any of those factories. They've organized, they represented workers in joint venture plants, but they don't represent workers in any of these new factories. And Sean Fain has said repeatedly that we weren't just negotiating for ourselves. We were negotiating to make these, to make our efforts at organizing these plants easier, because if you could see what the UAW members are getting, you know, you might say, oh, I'd be willing to sign a card for UAW representation. Well, literally the ink was not dry before Toyota announced that it was giving raises to employees at its plant in Georgetown, Kentucky. And so the UAW seized on that and said, see, you know, they're afraid of us coming to negotiate, but, you know, we consider people at these car makers to be our future union brothers and sisters. And they have said that they've gotten, I'm not sure if this is true, but that they've gotten thousands of inquiries so far from employees at the transplants who would like to join the union.
We're talking to journalist Micheline Maynard about the results of the UAW strikes, what's next in the auto industry. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? If you are a car owner or a car shopper, are you looking at electric vehicles as an option? That's a factor in these negotiations, as we just heard. Were you or your family, your community affected by plant closures over the years, including in Janesville? Are you just across the border in Illinois watching what's going to happen at that Belvedere plant that we were just talking about? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Journalist Micheline Maynard is with us. Her new Substack newsletter is called Intersection, Everything That Moves. She's been covering the auto industry for a good long time now. We're talking about what the UAW strikes accomplished, where the auto industry goes next, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you worked in the auto industry? Do you work in it now? Do you receive a pension? Have you been watching these negotiations maybe with that in mind? A lot of union action this year, a lot of resolutions, at least partly in favor of the unions. Are you glad to see that, or does that worry you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Micheline, we've seen that Actors Guild, now the Screen Actors Guild, resolve their strike. We've seen a lot of labor action this year. People have talked about the hot labor summer. Do you see the UAW tentative agreements here as part of a wider union trend in the United States?
The UAW got enormous support from other unions, from townspeople, from local businesses like bakeries and even franchise restaurants during the strike. And I really think it touched a chord. It was a great story because here you have this brand new president of the union who's basically said, you know what, no more labor management cooperations. And he said yesterday, I think, we are not the HR department for the companies. You know, we are a union. They made it very clear that this whole 40 years of labor management cooperation is over in the auto industry. You know, no more golf tournaments, no more black tie events, that kind of thing. And I think they really touched a chord with a lot of people. The economy has been awful for many people, and especially for the younger members of the union. You know, they're only getting paid about $14 to $17 an hour, depending on where they're working in the companies. And, you know, over the last couple of years, the fast food restaurant workers were able to demand more money from fast food places like McDonald's and Burger King and others. And I think the UAW members said, you know, we need to get our fair share. And Sean Fain really played off of that. And I think he got lots of sympathy for it.
The automakers argued through this process that, hey, if we give the unions everything they want or most of what they want, car prices are going to go up for consumers. We're going to be at a competitive disadvantage with those other auto plants around the country that are not unionized. Sean Fain argued that, no, we're just going to cut into some of your big profits here. What do you make of that part of the dispute?
Well, two of the companies during the negotiations said that what the union was asking for would bankrupt them, which is silly because they actually did go bankrupt in two of them in 2009, General Motors and Chrysler. At the time was Chrysler, and they were in horrible shape compared with where they are now. The other thing to think about is now 80% of vehicle sales are pickups and SUVs, and the average price of a new vehicle is now around $48,000. And when I bought my first little Toyota back in the 80s, I paid $5,200, you know, so it's unfathomable to a lot of us on how expensive vehicles have gotten. Those are probably prices that our parents and grandparents paid for a house way back when. So I think the public will probably see the car makers raise prices, but you know, when cars don't sell, rebates and incentives come right back. So this will be very interesting to see whether they can sustain higher prices or whether they're going to have to bring them down.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in New Berlin. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yes, your guest mentioned that in the joint ventures for the battery plants, that union recognition might be discussed down the road. And I was wondering if you meant a card check agreement. Was a card check agreement negotiated in the UAW contract?
So the way it's set up is in a couple of the plants, the workers have a right to flow in. In other words, they if they're part of the company and they want to go work in an electric battery plant, they go in and they remain UAW workers. And then if that fills up over 50% of the plant, then the plant becomes a UAW represented plant. And if it doesn't, then they would have a card check. And Sean Fain said specifically at two of the plants that there would be card checks. And that, so to explain what that is to listeners, you sign a card designating that the UAW is your bargaining representative. And then the National Labor Relations Board will oversee an election and they will check the cards.
Tim, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Micheline, we've seen a lot of states adopt what they call right-to-work laws, making it easier for workers to opt out of paying union dues at unionized plants. How big an issue is that in a negotiation like this? Did that get in the way, or are enough of these plants in not those kind of states where it didn't matter so much?
Well, some of them are in right-to-work states, and so what right-to-work work means is that you're not forced to join a union even if one is formed in your workplace and you can't be required to pay union dues. And so that is a tricky situation, and that is part of the situation with these electric vehicle battery plants. There's going to be some in Tennessee and Kentucky, which are right-to-work states, and there is supposed to be one in Marshall, Michigan that Ford is building. General Motors is building a plant near Spring Hill, Tennessee, which people might remember from Saturn, except it's now a General Motors plant. And then the battery plant that's being built for Stellantis is outside of Belvedere. So I don't think Illinois is right to work. So that one would be a safe situation pretty much for the union. But the ones in the South are not going to be, free throws for them. They're going to have to probably do some work to organize at least one or two of them.
I want to spend a little time on electric vehicles, EVs, and their future, because this was such a big part of the story we're talking about.
Yes.
Now, we've seen a boom. It seemed like for a while the numbers escalating rapidly, but now I keep seeing articles like, well, wait a minute, Americans are getting a little shy about buying EVs. What do you see in progress toward transitioning over to electric vehicles?
So we have seen quite a lot of growth in EV purchases compared with nothing. I mean, if you think about it, EVs have been sort of curiosities over the last 20 years or so. But when Tesla came along and introduced lower priced EVs, that's when the sales have taken off. And there are a couple of models from the Detroit companies that do pretty well. We haven't seen Toyota really push into the market yet. And I think that will make a big difference. But right now, I think there's some incentives on Teslas to get people to buy them. And there's a lot of skepticism. I mean, I was looking at the map of where EV chargers are. And of course, I'm looking at the state of Michigan since I live here. But when you get north of Traverse City, there's almost no chargers up there. I mean, they're up in around Traverse City because you're vacationers. But if you have a camp up in the Upper Peninsula and you want to drive from the Detroit area to the UP, you better charge up your vehicle and make sure that you can get to where you're going and get back from where you're going, at least in time to get to a charger. And I would imagine Wisconsin is very similar, that in the North Country, there are not as many chargers as there would be around Milwaukee and Madison.
One line I've been very curious about, the electric equivalent of the Ford F-150, this incredibly popular pickup truck for home use, for job sites and more. Are people embracing that as an EV?
I think people are very intrigued by the Lightning, and I think it got off to a pretty strong start, and then there were some defects on the vehicle that gave people a little pause about it. But, the cool thing about the Lightning, to me at least, is that you can charge things from the Lightning. So if you're on a job site and you need to charge up your power tools or whatever, you can plug it into the truck and the truck will charge it up. And so that is an advantage, I think, for a lot of people who use electric vehicles for commercial uses. Again, I think the issue is, will you have the charge to get to and from where you need to get? And that's the big question about all these vehicles.
we see trend pieces about younger people, Gen Z, millennials, at least anecdotally, maybe not as interested in driving or not as interested in owning cars. Maybe they just can't afford them. I don't know. Oh, is that something that people on labor and industry side are watching and worrying about?
Definitely. I've been watching this issue for about 15 years because we've had the rise of Zipcar. We've had the rise of Lyft and Uber. Many, many cities have rental bikes, rental scooters. A lot of people are living in walkable communities. I live in a walkable community. I like the idea of not having to drive everywhere all the time. And younger people, of course, they're laden with student loan debt. Houses are expensive, living is expensive. And, you know, I think eventually if you have family, you probably will have to get a vehicle at some point, at least one vehicle for the family. But people who are, you know, 45 and younger have all these choices that didn't exist even 10 or 15 years ago. And so they aren't in a super rush to buy vehicles. Of course, I don't want to generalize because there are plenty of younger people buying vehicles, but they have choices that their mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles didn't have.
A quick question from a listener. Don't have time to take a call, but a listener wondering about plug-in hybrids. Are we seeing those as a big option, maybe a transition for people who aren't quite there for EVs, just in our last half a minute or so?
Yeah, Toyota is definitely putting some focus on plug-in hybrids, and Toyota's got a new battery under development that they think will give a much larger range. So I would keep an eye on what they're doing with plug-ins.
Mickey, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Micheline Maynard, journalist and broadcaster based in Michigan. She's the author of the 2003 book, The End of Detroit, How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Market. Now she's got a Substack newsletter. You can find it. It's called Intersection, Everything That Moves. We'll get a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. We talked to her about the state of the auto industry as UAW shops around the country are voting on agreements reached with the three major unionized automakers. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.